Blog Talk Radio.
Your host tonight is the eating disorder pro, Dr. J. Renee Norton. She comes to you live from Cincinnati, Ohio, home of the Bengals, the Reds, and of course, the Norton Center for Eating Disorders. If you or a loved one is struggling with obesity, anorexia, bulimia, emotional eating, or if you're just worried about food pollution, then you'll want to unhook and tune in.
Good evening and welcome to the Eating Disorder Pro Show. I'm Dr. J. Renee Norton, and I am the Eating Disorder Pro. So tonight we are going to talk about my dog, Magi. I probably haven't mentioned him previously on the show, and of course you know we have the Magi and Mongo series of books for children, Let's Eat and How Magi Got Mongo Off the Couch, both of which are lifestyle books for little kids aged anywhere from 2, 2.5 to 7. Magi was the inspiration for those books because Magi has his own story to tell. And in a nutshell, I really combined the two dogs, Magi and Mongo. I don't know if you know, if you've seen the books, but Mongo was a couch potato, and Magi was this very, very healthy, happy, energetic dog that loved to get outside in the sun, and he drank water, which he highly recommends to everyone, and a very fit animal. And when he befriended Mongo, Mongo turned into a very fit animal as well, and they became famous friends. That's the story. Well, that's actually the story of Magi's life. When I got Magi, he was very small. He was only 5 weeks old. Very, very smart little dog, though. Housebroken in 4 days at a very early age, obviously. And really healthy guy, but just ate constantly. And I don't know whether he technically did have or not, but from the get-go, he had eating issues. And I suspect now that perhaps he did have Cushing's. However, the dog food that he was eating definitely wasn't helping. I kept taking him to a vet, and he just kept getting fatter and fatter. He is a Labradoodle, so he's a large dog to begin with. And although he was the runt of the litter, and the vet initially cautioned me that he might be somewhat undersized, he definitely didn't live up to that expectation. He began gaining weight at an amazing rate almost immediately. And like I said, he never stopped eating. And he started getting fat. He was, by the time he was 2 years old, he weighed 118 to 125 pounds. That was really too fat. He could barely make it up the steps. His belly, I could, you know, if I make a circle of my arms, his belly was not quite that big, but close. He was truly obese. And this was from eating the most expensive prescription dog food that that I could find. Now, he is currently going on 13. And he now weighs about 82 pounds. And what happened, I think, is a really good example of how polluted foods can dramatically change the health of an individual, or in this case, a canine. When, as I said, when I first got him, I started him on just good, healthy dog food, nothing too fancy, a puppy food, a puppy chow. And I didn't think that you were supposed to feed dogs table scraps, so I was very careful not to do that. And he began gaining weight, and he just seemed like he was always hungry. The vet, at about 6 months, the vet said, wow, he's getting a little bit overweight here. You know, maybe you should try a better dog food, and we did. And that didn't help. He gained more weight. And as I mentioned, by the time he was 2 years old, he was pretty much morbidly obese. But not only was he obese, he had skin infections, ear infections, weepy, gunky eyes all the time. His nose was always running. I don't know if you've ever looked at your dog to see if his nose was running, but he literally had a runny nose, gunky, disgusting, gunky eyes. And at one point, he had such a bad skin allergy on his chest, he actually didn't have hair on his chest anymore. It turned this really dark color, and it got infected. It was just disgusting. So the poor guy, for about the first 2 years of his life, was on antibiotics and some form of a cortisone or a corticoids. Hormones, steroids, anti-itch medications. He was on all of them. It was dreadful. It was expensive, and it was really frustrating. The worst part was that every time I took him to the vet, she made fun of him for being fat. That kind of hurt my feelings. And she also just kept recommending more and more expensive dog food. I finally decided, since she didn't really seem to like my dog that much, to get a new vet. And I also decided to stop buying dog food because it was costing me a fortune. And I thought if I started making his dog food, it might be better for him, and it might be better for me. I thought it would be less expensive. It turned out it wasn't less expensive. And it took me a long time, several years, to kind of get the hang of how to do this in a way that wasn't so freaking time consuming. There were years when I spent boiling fish and then boiling vegetables and processing them. Dogs don't chew, so processing them in a food processor and then freezing all that mess, and it was just a nightmare. But when I started making his dog food, he lost weight, became very healthy. The eye infections, the ear infections, the skin issues all went away. He had the worst looking coat before I started making his dog food, and he has the most beautiful coat now. So basically, in a nutshell, what he eats now is some sort of fish. I get the cheapest fish I can get, usually from Costco. Right now, we're doing tuna, and Kirkland tuna is a skipjack, so it's a really good tuna. It has very high skipjack, if you don't know this already, has a very high amount of selenium in it and a very low amount of mercury, so it's an incredibly good fish. And then also from Costco's, they have frozen vegetables, 5-pound bags for $6. So when I started shopping at Costco's, I was able to switch him over from conventional vegetables to organic frozen vegetables, which makes me very happy. And now what I do when I feed him is I take the frozen vegetables, I thaw them out, I put them in a food processor, I put some sea salt in there, and also if I am feeding him something to bulk it up a little bit, let's say that I make him some, I get organic small potatoes, and I microwave those, salt and pepper those, and then add some coconut oil. Also add a big tablespoon of coconut oil to his meal once a day. So he is getting really good brain food, and I think that makes a difference too. But I've only just recently started doing that. The coconut oil is like in the last year or so. Raw processed vegetables with sea salt. I do give him a vitamin that has a little bit of iodine in it. It's a dog vitamin. And just to make sure that he gets all of the minerals that he needs. In addition, I might throw in some chopped up potatoes that I chop up pretty small because, again, he doesn't chew. The food processed frozen vegetables, and I use peas, beans, mixed vegetables. I don't do broccoli because it gives him gas. And then he also eats fruits, and there are a lot of fruits that he likes and a lot of fruits that he can eat. He does fine with apples. He doesn't care for bananas at all. He likes peaches. He likes watermelon. Of course, I don't give him grapes. Grapes are not supposed to be good for dogs. And let's see, what other fruits does he eat? He'll pretty much eat any fruit except that he loves blueberries. So every once in a while he gets some fruit. He loves cheese, huge cheese eater, and does really well with cheese. So anytime there's extra cheese. And then, of course, he gets the skipjack tuna from Costco, which, again, as I said, is good. So he gets 6 ounces of tuna in the morning, 6 ounces of tuna in the evening, and about 3 cups of raw processed vegetables and in the morning, and 3 cups in the afternoon. So he eats a lot of food, but it's very low calorie, very high protein. And he's in exceptional health. Every time I take him to the vet comments on his good health, his beautiful teeth, his beautiful coat, his energy level. He's showing no signs of arthritis. He is literally the picture of health. So what we're talking about tonight, besides this miraculous recovery that Magi had when we went from the most expensive prescription dog foods, all of which were supposed to be very high in protein, but of course I now know that that wasn't really protein. That was ovalized, hydrolyzed, and just plain rotten ingredients in most of the dog foods. Not saying that there aren't good dog foods out there. I just haven't found any better than making my own dog food. But let's take a look at some of the things that might be in your dog's dog foods that could be causing them problems. Grain dog foods conceal a lot of hidden contaminants. First of all, after grains are harvested, they have to be stored. And the longer they're stored, the greater the risk of contamination. And some of these are really nasty pollutants. They're insects, they're mites, and basically they're mold. But what's worse is that many dog food companies are famous for using the cheapest grains they can find, and they often use rejects. And byproducts of the human food industry. So the cereal grain leftovers that are classified as unfit for human consumption go into your dog and cat pet food. Other low-quality ingredients like these can always be a fertile ground for breeding some of the nastiest contaminants that we find in dog food. How these dangerous contaminants end up in your dog food is that the insects and their droppings can be found in cheap, low-quality grains, as I mentioned, and the most common insect contaminants include red flower beetles, granary weevils, rice weevils, mealworms, and flat grain beetles, Indian meal moth, and sawtooth grain beetles. So grain infections are so common that the damage done by insects after the crops are harvested is sometimes greater than the damage that's done during the growing season itself. Think about that. There's more damage to the crop once the crop is harvested by these infestations than while the bugs are out there in the field eating the grain. So that's how the carcasses of dead grain insects can get in the commercial dog food. These common dog food pollutants should be considered prime suspects when you're trying to get your dog over an allergy. Grain mites multiply very, very fast. In no time are out of control. So, you know, what do you get when you mix a low-quality feed grain and plenty of moisture and you put them together for a long enough time, you're going to end up with mites, of course, and probably lots of them. They're very closely related to the dust mite, which probably know, or if you don't know, understand is probably the most allergenic household pest in the human population. And man, can they multiply fast. One female mite can lay up to 800 eggs in just as little as 9 days. That's a lot of eggs. And they all lay up to 800 eggs themselves. So the juvenile mite morphs into a stage called known as the hippopus. And during that phase, their bodies harden. And then they develop these little suckers underneath on their bellies. And at this point, those little tiny arthropod with the suckers attach themselves to other, maybe a grain weevil or a beetle. And that's how they spread around in the grain in an entire bin of grain. Those are the most likely cause of chronic allergies. They cause atopic dermatitis, which is just an agonizing condition for dogs. That's what Madge I had. And it can go undiagnosed because his hair at that point was pretty long. And I had no idea how bad his skin infection was, his atopic dermatitis was, until I had his hair cut really, and also actually his hair started falling out on his chest. And that's when I first realized that, and I knew about the ear allergies and the eye allergies, and he did seem to scratch a lot, but that's when I found out how terrible this skin allergy was. And I felt horrible because I realized he probably had had it for several years. And it was, I'm sure it was just agonizing for him. So the disease is chronic. The allergic skin reaction are found in high numbers in the dog environment. The symptoms are so common, it's really easy to overlook them. I mean, the itching, he never itches now. Itching was just a way of life for him. Excessive licking, chewing his paws, chewing his abdomen or his groin. Of course, oozing ears, balding areas, which is called alopecia. Black pigmentation, like I mentioned earlier, that can occur around the groin, but it also can occur on the skin. Secondary yeast or bacterial infections. He had so many yeast infections. And you wonder if, you know, if your dog has all of these infections, how many of these things are you getting? Which is kind of creepy. Anyway, it's been well known for a number of years that this atopic dermatitis is caused by dust mites, and you can have them in your carpeting, and they also cause allergies in humans. So could mite contaminated dog food have anything to do with the skin allergies? Well, absolutely. It certainly does. The research points a very accusing finger at atopic dermatitis. A study at Wright State University, my alma mater, concluded that storage mite sensitivity in dogs might be as important, if not more important, than dust mite sensitivity. In other words, the consumption of grain storage mites and their carcasses must be considered an end quote. What we want to be sure of is that we are aware of what's in the food that we're feeding our dogs. And I personally think it's a great idea to make your own dog food. I have had great success with my dog food. As I said, it wasn't as inexpensive as I had hoped. It's not bad now. I've estimated that I spend about $100 to $130 a month on his food, but he literally has no vet bills. I don't even get the shots anymore, a lot of the shots anymore for him, because he really doesn't need them. Plus, I think some of them are dangerous anyway. And he's incredibly healthy. I get the shots, of course, that he absolutely needs. But he's such a healthy dog. I've asked several times when I've taken him to the dog groomer, do you think his teeth need to be cleaned? And the dog groomer always says, not really. They look great. He doesn't chew any bones. I still think he may be allergic to animal protein, although I'm not so sure of that anymore. I think it maybe was just bad animal protein and or the animal protein, which really wasn't even animal protein in his dog food. That's what they called it, but we know that it was mostly MSG. I think that's really what he was allergic to. In any case, it's really easy to make your own dog food. I don't have to freeze it anymore. I make enough to last for 3 or 4 days. All I do is pour the frozen or thawed out frozen vegetables into the food processor, salt them, maybe nuke some potatoes and mash them up with some coconut oil, salt that, and then open up a tin can of tuna fish and mix it all together. And then if I have any leftovers, especially if I have anything left over with cheese, he's a huge cheese fan, I'll throw that in there. And occasionally some leftover fruit, maybe that's going bad. The only thing he doesn't like, as I mentioned earlier, are bananas. So that's one way to deal with the whole food allergy thing for your dog. There are some dog companies that do a pretty good job of making an all-organic truly food-based dog food. However, that does get expensive when it really is pure animal protein with no additives. And I think it's just as easy to make your own dog food. If people have suggestions about dog foods that they particularly like, especially hypoallergenic and or organic dog foods, I'd love to hear about them. I'm probably not going to switch myself, but some of the other listeners might be interested. So another question about grain allergies in dogs is, even though many people insist that cereal grains are the most frequent cause of allergies, a doctor by the name of Dr. Stephen White, a professor of veterinary medicine at the University of California at Davis, says that cereal grains are not the only cause of food allergies, that dogs are also allergic to beef, chicken, milk, eggs, corn, wheat, and soy. I'm pretty sure that Magi is allergic to soy. It's debatable whether he's allergic to beef. He does not appear to be allergic to chicken, milk, eggs, and I'm not sure about corn because I don't eat any corn, and so he doesn't either. All right. Are grains hard to digest? Most dog owners favor grain-free foods because they believe that grains are difficult for their dogs to digest. That may or may not be true. There's a digestive enzyme called amylase, and it's a special enzyme that herbivores and omnivores produce in our saliva. And although they don't have that enzyme in their saliva, they do have it before these carbs reach the stomach. So they can digest these carbs in their stomach. They do have the right enzyme for it. So grains should be okay for a dog. You just have to make sure that they're healthy grains. So another thing that is happening, and this isn't just happening with animals, but it is happening with animals, and I think we should be aware of it, and that is vinyl. Many pet toys are still being made of vinyl. And, of course, we now know that vinyl is very bad for human beings. So we don't have vinyl. We rarely see vinyl toys for children anymore. Public concern has finally increased about vinyl products, and it would be very unusual to find a vinyl product for an infant. In fact, 9 major governments around the world and many municipalities have banned or advised strongly against the use of these additives in children's toys and sometimes also in childcare items like the state of California, the entire EU, Japan, Fiji, Argentina, Mexico have all passed laws enforcing restrictions against vinyl. Canada and Australia have asked for voluntary measures from producers of vinyl toys. But it's really important that you take personal responsibility for making sure that your dog, your puppy, does not have vinyl toys. Dogs are particularly at risk because they chew on the toy. And when they chew on the toy, it causes even more problems. Cats, probably not so much. Cats play with their paws. Dogs sort of play with their jaws. You'd be more concerned about your dog. Anyway, let's talk a bit about what vinyl is. So vinyl's common name is polyvinyl chloride, or PVC. And it's a cheap plastic that we use to make all kinds of stuff. In fact, it's just about everywhere. Although I think I have gotten almost all of the PVC out of my home. I can kind of smell it a mile away. Don't have it in my bed. I don't store anything in plastic. I store everything in glass these days. I just freaking love jars, mason jars. I think they're the coolest thing. I use them for everything. I kind of decorate with them. But anyway, I really like glass for storage. And I really avoid especially the really cheap plastics, but in general, I don't have very much plastic left in my house at all. Your dog almost certainly has some vinyl in his life. A lot of things for dogs are made with vinyl, their collars, sometimes their beds, which is pretty sad, and most importantly, their toys. One thing that isn't made of vinyl are the Kong. So you don't have to worry about the Kong. If your dog loves his Kong and you are you know, keeping him busy with a comb on a regular basis. That is made of rubber, and it's fine. It can even go in the dishwasher. In fact, you should put it in the dishwasher. It depends on how long it takes him to get the stuff out of it, but I always clean his comb really good, really well before I give it back to him again. So back to the vinyl. Chlorine constitutes one of vinyl's primary chemical building blocks. And we know that chlorine produces some very dangerous effects in people. Primarily, they are created with dioxins. Dioxins can cause cancer, reproductive and developmental problems, and immune system damage in humans as well as in animals. They also spread around the environment and concentrate and kind of work their way up the food chain. So you have to be aware that they're there. Don't panic. Do get busy. Do get active. Do know what to look for and what to do about it. Dioxins are byproducts of several industrial processes, one being the manufacture of vinyl. And vinyl produces dioxins not only when it's made, but it also ends up producing them when it's incinerated. And it's very dicey to recycle for that reason. So the development of vinyl brought some very deadly problems into the world. Between manufacture and disposal, vinyl itself is pretty stable, and toxicologists agree that it's probably safe for the user. But PVC by itself is too hard and too brittle to do much with it. So really the problem are all of the additives that make it soft and flexible and able to take colorant. It also can have fragrances added to it, which I think is just disgusting. But anyway, according to Dr. David Santillo, senior scientist with Greenpeace Research Laboratory based at the University of Exeter in the UK, you can end up with a vinyl product of which only a small portion is actually the polyvinyl chloride plastic. And there's the rub. While the vinyl itself may be relatively safe, the additives are very dangerous. And probably the worst one are the phthalates. Excuse me. Vinyl can contain a number of additives known to be toxic, among them lead, organotins, alkyl phenols, bisphenol A, or BPA, to name but a few. But those getting the most attention today are the phthalates. They are the common name for phthalate esters, and these human-made chemicals, when introduced into vinyl, make it soft and very cooperative, as I mentioned earlier. The molecules actually don't bond with the PVC. They just sort of move freely through it, which actually makes it more unstable and it's even more dangerous. So the phthalates used to plasticize PVC are what give it that vinyl smell. If you can smell it, then you and your dog are inhaling phthalates, and it's definitely an off gas that you really don't want to be inhaling. Over the product's lifetime, vinyl phthalates will leach out completely into any skin, any living tissue, air, water, earth, whatever it comes into contact with, basically. That's why old vinyl becomes so dry and brittle, and you throw it away at that point when it's no longer dangerous. At that point, you probably would be okay to keep it. But a general guideline is the stronger a vinyl product smells, the greater the amount of phthalate it contains. You know that new car smell you get? Yep, those are phthalates. It drives me crazy getting a new car. I can't stand it. I just keep washing it and putting air cleaners in the car, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. I have yet to find an organic dashboard. In any case, so it's really the additives that we have to worry about more than anything else. So what to do? What to do? Well, for starters, it's very important to check the ingredients. I mean, check what your toys, the toys that you give your dog, are made of. They can cause toxicity and biochemical changes in the kidneys and the liver. The negative effect that most of the press is focused on are the reproductive issues, and these are in humans. They cause lowered sperm count, abnormal sperm, and at an even more profound level, the improper development of sex organs, especially in males, which is pretty frightening. some of these problems, which I've been writing about in my book, are undescended testicles in young children. That doesn't sound like such a terrible thing, but that has become so common, and it leads to very significant problems later in life. So while the testicles will come down in children, later in life there could be some serious problems. And these are, if we can avoid these by staying away from phthalates and PVCs and vinyl in general, why not? There are also inappropriate levels of certain hormones, and especially in newborn babies, and et cetera, et cetera. So bad stuff. We really want to try and stay away from that stuff, both before you get pregnant, certainly while you're pregnant, and for sure after the baby comes home, and also after you bring your puppy dog home. Whereas babies kind of outgrow the tendency to chew on their toys, dogs don't. That's one of Magi's favorite things, is to play with his red cone. And he will play with it for hours, or just play with anything, chew on any of his rubber toys for hours. A really, really good thing, especially for a dog that's got allergies to beef, are reindeer antler and or deer antlers. Those seem to be mostly minerals. He loves chewing on that thing, and it lasts forever. I've got one he's had it almost a year, and he's just barely made a dent in it. So those things are awesome. Try those as a way of keeping them happy and keeping them safe. All right. So some of the things that make dogs more at risk is that they put pressure on the vinyl toys, and that's not a good thing. So for example, they chew, which is repeated pressure. They also, saliva mixes with the chemicals in the vinyl. Body heat is not good. That mixes with the chemicals. Digestion, if they actually swallow a piece of it, that could be a really bad thing. They inhale the airborne chemicals, and they also come into contact. Their skin comes into contact by snoozing with it or cleaning up against it. Basically, they sleep with their toys. All of these are a factor when a dog chews on a vinyl toy, especially if it does happen to, if they do happen to swallow it, then some really bad things can happen, because for whatever reason, once it's inside the dog, it often turns very hard. It loses its softness. The chemicals sort of leach out, and that can be very dangerous and life-threatening for the dog. There are some really good toys out there that are alternative to vinyl toys. There's the Bad Cuz. There's the whole Lee Roller. Those are all made of rubber. The Kong, again, is made of rubber and actually can even be washed in the dishwasher. So those are good things. And try the antlers. They are awesome. My dog absolutely loves them. So I think that is it for this evening. It's been a pleasure being with you. Thank you again for your comments and your feedback, and let us know if you like this. I will have some pictures, as you can see, and some data along with this discussion of vinyl and allergens in dog food. It's really important that you read, if you are buying or if you are buying your dog food on the market, it's very important that you read the ingredients. Again, as usual, the fewer ingredients, the better. Watch out for hydrolyzed, autolyzed, any change. And if it doesn't just say beef, and then even if it does, it ought to say from grass-fed instead of grain-fed, preferably organic. Otherwise, you're just probably feeding your dog GMOs. My strong preference is to feed my dog food that I made. The fish is so good for them. It really keeps them young, good for their brains, just like it's very good for our brain. So those are a few suggestions on how to keep your dog healthy and happy, and how to keep them alive longer and good friends, and how to protect them. That's it from the Eating Disorder Pro for this evening. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Eat clean, commit to be fit, get some sunshine, and live your life wisely. Good night.